Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So we've talked about how high Boston rents are, but what about the wages required to pay those housing costs? Well, according to a report released earlier this year by the National Low Income Housing Coalition, there is no single state in the United States where a full-time minimum wage worker can afford to rent a one-bedroom apartment for less than 30% of his or her paycheck. Not one single state. In fact, right here in Massachusetts, you'd have to work 87 hours per week at minimum wage, to realistically afford a one-bedroom. That's one of the reasons why the fight for a $15 minimum wage has picked up some national momentum. Here's Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders back in September.
We have got to raise the minimum wage over a period of years to a living wage. In my view, maybe it's a radical view, I don't think so. If somebody works 40 hours a week in the United States of America, that person should not be living in poverty.
But do you ever wonder, $10, $12, $15, all these numbers, all these proposals, where do they come from? And is there a tipping point for our economy, the point at which raising the minimum wage, again, 10, 12, 15, whatever, that it does more harm than good to the economy overall? Well, joining us now to explain more is Robert Polin. He's co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. Also with us is Aaron Dubay, associate professor of economics, also at UMass Amherst. Aaron, welcome to you.
Great to be on.
Okay. Well, we asked both of you to join us because there is this central question that we've been wondering for a long time. Again, $10, $12, $15, people are coming up with these numbers for some reason. So, Robert Polin, let me just start with you. What factors do you think we should be considering when picking what would be an ideal minimum wage?
Well, you already summarized both of them. The first one is, what constitutes a livable wage? What wage rate would enable workers to have a minimally decent living standard, a living wage? So that's number one. And then the second one is, at what point do you start to see negative unintended consequences from raising the minimum wage? In particular, at what point would you start to see businesses hiring fewer workers or laying off workers because they would be faced with the high minimum wage? So those are the two central questions that we need to consider jointly when we try to think about what would be a decent minimum wage standard.
And do you have an answer for the second part of that question? Because that is the primary pushback that people who oppose increases to the minimum wage offer first and foremost, that it has a negative effect on the economy. Do you know what the tipping point number is?
Nobody knows for sure, of course, but having done some work on this, I do think that the Bernie Sanders proposal, and it certainly didn't start with Bernie Sanders, it really started with minimum wage workers, of a $15 minimum wage, national minimum wage, phased in over 5 years to give the economy time to adjust, is workable. That is, we can operate the economy with a national $15 minimum wage without seeing any kind of significant employment losses.
Okay. Well, Aaron Dubay, let me turn to you on this because you've actually authored several significant studies that ask the question or actually look at real data where places have increased minimum wages. And you found that a 10% increase in the minimum wage affects employment in the restaurant or retail industries by less than 1%. So essentially not at all. How are we to interpret that outcome?
I think the best evidence and most of the evidence looking at minimum wage changes over the last several decades suggests that the overall impact on jobs for low-wage workers is fairly small. We do see evidence of some increases in prices. For example, the price of a burger might go up a little bit when minimum wage increases. We see some evidence that turnover falls when the minimum wage rises. That can help offset some of the cost increases via increased productivity. Overall, these kind of offsets have led to the employment effects being fairly small to date. And here I think it's useful to keep in mind that in the United States, the last several decades, the minimum wage has been very low.
Mm-hmm.
Just to put this in perspective, the minimum wage in inflation-adjusted terms was $9.39 an hour back in 1969. It was $8.67 in 1979. So the federal minimum wage of $7.25 today has not kept up with cost of living. It has also not kept up with other wages. For example, you can compare the minimum wage to the median wage. That
right.
is a pretty good proxy for the bite of the minimum wage. So if you look across other developed countries, it's pretty common to find a minimum wage that bites something around 50% of the median wage of full-time workers. Even here in the United States, over the 60s and 70s, that was a pretty common number.
Well, Aaron Dubé, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me just jump in here because I do have a quick question along those lines before I turn back to Bob Polen. Because we heard Bob Polen tell us that, you know, a $15 target is one that he would advocate. But I've read in the New York Times that you may support, or you mentioned legislation that would raise the minimum wage to roughly $10.10 an hour and index it to future cost of living increases. So the you know, $10.10 isn't the $15. Why do you think the $10 mark is a better one for now?
So I think if you look at where a 50% of median wage would be, as an example, but a $12 by 2020 would be quite close to that, in fact. So if we want to look at what kind of minimum wages we already have had in the United States, and what kind of minimum wages we can look across the Atlantic Ocean and see a lot of other European countries see, something like the $12 by 2020 would certainly be within that ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not to say, and I'm going to be really clear about this, that there's nothing magical about any threshold, okay? And in a sense, we also want to be careful not being prisoners of history if history is full of bad choices. So if the minimum wage has been really low by historical and comparative standards in the United States in the last several decades, and that's where our evidence base comes from, it is both important to point out that that doesn't necessarily mean that a minimum wage higher than, say, $12 by 2020 is a bad idea.
Right.
It's also, however, fair to point out that we don't have the kind of empirical evidence to directly draw upon to say what that would do to have a federal minimum wage is $15 an hour. I feel fairly comfortable based on our evidence base of extrapolating to something like $12, you know, in the same time period.
Okay, so let me just jump in here and let Bob Polen back into the conversation. You heard Aaron Dubé share several thoughts there about, you know, 10, 12, 15. Your response?
Well, of course, I have a great deal of respect for Aaron. He's my department colleague. That said, a couple points. As Aaron himself pointed out, Aaron's looking at the relationship between the median or the average wage and the minimum wage. The fact is, in the United States, the median wage or the average wage has also stagnated for basically 40 years. So raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour and exceeding that ratio of the average wage to the minimum wage is a way through which we start to change the dynamic in the labor force in this country to benefit not just low-wage workers, but workers across the spectrum.
Well, can I just jump in here? Because I'm the kind of person who likes to learn from examples. And so I wonder... there aren't that many examples in the United States of a $15 minimum wage. Are there places internationally that we can look to see what the effects were or have been?
Well, the one obvious example is Australia today, where the minimum wage is in the range of $15 an hour. And again, we don't see the negative employment effects that people talk about. The study that I myself did with Jeanette Wicks Lim also was very example practical oriented. We actually looked at the fast food industry per se, and we said, okay, what if everybody in the fast food industry got up to a $15 minimum wage over 5 years, a 5-year phase in, and what would happen to the costs of these of fast food firms and how would they adjust. Now, Aaron mentioned, and I agree, that firms can adjust to their cost increases in other ways through raising productivity, lowering turnover, lowering absenteeism. They can increase their prices, and we assume that prices would go up. So, for example, a Big Mac, the price we assume at today's average is around $4.80, would go up 3% a year to $5.40. So there would be adjustments in the economy, but through those adjustments, basically we're saying that these can absorb the cost increases. We did then have a new dynamic in the labor force. Everyone is concerned about inequality. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, inequality comes down to how much people earn on the job. And what's happened over the U.S. for the minimum wage and the average wage is essentially a long-term stagnation or decline
right.
in what an average person makes when they show up on the job.
Well, let me turn right back to Aaron Dubé on that because, Aaron Dubé, as Bob Polen just pointed out, if you are pegging a minimum wage or tying it to what the median wage has been, as you have suggested, I mean, what do you make of Bob Polen's argument that that perhaps isn't the best way to go if wages as a whole for most workers haven't kept up with cost of living, inflation, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I think Bob is absolutely right about what is going on in terms of inequality and stagnating wages. And I think I agree with pretty much everything he said. I do think we have to just step back for a second and think about what are the different arrows we have in our quiver when it comes to fighting inequality. And, you know, my perspective is that we need a broad range of tools at our disposal. And, I would imagine only that Bob probably agrees with that. So I think the minimum wage has a role to play in fighting inequality. It's actually a very important role to play. And I think we can raise the minimum wage. I think at some point we have to just take stock of what is the evidence that we have. And here I think our policies are lagging in a sense of where the evidence has been. So, you know, we're here discussing whether $12 or $15 minimum wage is a better way to go. I think it's, you know, all of that is much better than when we are today, which is $7.25 federal minimum wage.
Right.
I think we need to learn from our experiences as we push for policies that are substantially higher than when we are right now.
So one last question for both of you, very briefly, because we've got, you know, just about a minute or so to go here. A lot of the attention, the political attention right now has been focused around fast food workers and their wages in America. I'm wondering, how good of a barometer or a measure is the fast food industry for the economy as a whole in terms of the effect of increasing the minimum wage? Bob Polen, your thoughts on that?
It's a good barometer precisely because the fast food industry has a very high concentration of low-wage workers. So if you can pull off a $15 minimum wage within the fast food industry without significant negative effects, then I think we can conclude that can be generalized for the economy as a whole.
Mm. And Aaron Dubé, your thought?
I agree with Bob. Restaurant workers generally are about a third of the minimum wage workforce, along with retail and accommodation and food service total is about two-thirds of the minimum wage workforce. So, and this is also where there's been organizing going on, which has really changed the conversation. Here we are talking about $12 and $15 an hour. That was very different from a couple years ago, maybe even 1 year ago, of what the minimum wage conversation was. And so I think the organizing that's going on at the ground level has a lot to do with changing that conversation.
Well, Aaron Dubé is a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Professor Dubé, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Robert Polen, co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass Amherst and a professor of economics there as well. Bob Polen, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
Listeners, let us know what you think. What do you think is the right number? $10, $12, $15 an hour? They're all higher than we have currently here in Massachusetts. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Send us a tweet at Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.